welcome to another episode of the Negative Positives Podcast. And now, coming to you live out of the Gutter Man Cave in beautiful Louisville, Kentucky. He likes his bourbon almost as much as he likes his Pentax. It's your host, Mike Gutterman.
Hello and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 225. I am your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in a nice, warm Louisville, Kentucky. And it is a Sunday night, so we have a guest, of course, but we also have we can call him a co-captain. I don't know. Andre Dominguez could not make it tonight. He has family in town this weekend, and they did like a little family trip. So I called on some of our fine members of that had been on the show before, kind of our backups, good dependable people I can count on. So and I couldn't think of anybody more dependable than none other than the guy that actually runs our Instagram account for us, which I'm very happy he does that because it's hard for me to stay on top of all this stuff. But it's none other than Mr. Bryce Randall. How are you doing tonight, Bryce?
I'm doing great, Mike. I appreciate you asking me to come on the show.
Oh, absolutely, man. I've been meaning to have you on the show anyway. You've been doing all this work for us on the Instagram account, so you might as well get a little fame out of it, right? So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough work.
Yeah, well, that's good. I actually want to talk to you a little bit about that sometime during the show. Maybe we'll talk about that towards the last segment or something. But right. Yeah. And our guest tonight, none other, all the way from Australia, Mr. Matt Murray from the Matt Loves Cameras podcast. How are you doing tonight, Matt?
G'day, Mike. I am doing very well. I'm speaking to you from the future. It is Monday here. It's in the afternoon. It's a little bit early. It's just gone after 12 o'clock midday, but it's a little bit early for drinking for me, but I might get stuck in as the show progresses.
Nice. Well, you know, since it is in the future, can you go ahead and listen to this podcast and tell me this episode came out okay?
So, it was the best one ever. Best one ever.
That's what I figured. That's what I figured.
Yeah. And also, I've got to say, I thought Andre would be watching Game of Thrones again. I thought that was his excuse this time.
Oh, you know what? He probably is what it is, and he's just afraid that he's such a dragon nerd, man. That's probably what it is. But yeah,
he might have manufactured the family family right. Coming in from out of town.
Isn't that called being hoodwinked? Or all right. So, Matt, I know a lot of people probably know about you through your podcast, and I know you've talked a lot about your photography and all that. But in case people haven't, how about you tell the fine folks a little bit about how you got into photography and about your podcast?
Yeah, sure. So when I was growing up, I was born in Brisbane, and I grew up, you know, I was born in the 70s, but I grew up in the 80s. And we never really had anyone in our family that was into photography at all. But my mum was the photographer in our family, and we had all these photo albums. And then also my grandmother, she was a photographer. I put that in air quotes. She had this old Kodak Brownie Bakelite kind of plasticky camera. We always used to pay out of my grandma because all her beautiful photo albums, she always used to cut people's heads off in the photos, and it was a big joke. But it's probably just, you know, now it's probably like parallax error, right? She was probably too close to the people taking the photo or something. I don't know. But I was always fascinated by photos as a kid and all these old photo albums, but I was never really interested in cameras. And then in 1994, when I was 20, I went over to Europe, and I thought, I better buy a camera. I'm the first person in my family going to Europe. So I bought a Pentax, Mike.
Yes.
Very, very proud of me.
Yes.
But it was it wasn't the best Pentax ever made. It was the Pentax Zoom 90WR. So it's a big point and shoot, weighs like a brick.
That's
waterproof.
Kind of a different, I don't know if you can really call those compact cameras, but you
know. No. I actually bought one recently because I was longing for it, and I got it in the mail, and I was like, oh man, this weighs a ton, you know, so, but I've got it now. And I actually bought two because it's actually got a little infrared remote control on the side of it. And I bought that back in the day because I'd set my camera up on a wall or a ledge in Europe, and I'd take a selfie of myself because I was a nerd. I was traveling by myself. But I've bought two of them now, and the remotes don't seem to work anymore. I've replaced the batteries in both the remotes, and I think the remotes have just had it. So I went around Europe for 2 years with this camera, and towards the end of my trip, I actually posted back I posted back all the photos, all the rolls of undeveloped film to my mum, because I thought, mum, you know, I gave her a bit of a sub story. Mum, I can't afford to get my photos developed. I've got no money left. And she said, I'll post them home and I'll get them developed for you here in Australia. And so I did that. And so when I got home to Australia, I found all these rolls of film my mum got processed. And I looked at them and I thought, wow, these really suck. These are really just average crap photos with this Pentax camera. And my mind went back to when I was in Europe and there was a guy. I went to this like European youth environmental camp and we did some environmental works in this tiny little village in France. And there was this English guy there with an SLR. And I remember one day I was taking pictures of the people at this youth camp kind of thing, you know, all from France, Germany, all these people. He was taking pictures of the field, this field and the sun. I said to him, mate, what are you doing? And he's like, take photos of the field and the sun. I said, there's nothing there. It's just like a sun. And he was telling me, oh, no, I change the aperture and I do this. And I was like, oh, man, this guy is such a nerd. But I was actually really, really, it's kind of like thinking, you know, this is a nerd alert, kind of massive nerd, but I was actually really admiring him as well, admiring his nerdiness that he knew all this about cameras. So when I got back and I saw all these crap photos, I thought, right, I've got to buy an SLR. And so that began my gas syndrome for cameras when I got home from Europe.
Mm-hmm. And so did you, so this was, you say, the 80s or 90s, I guess is what,
so that
right?
was, yeah. I got back in 1996, so I ditched, and of course the only type of photography then was film photography.
Yeah.
So I ditched the Pentax and I got a Canon EOS 500N, which is pretty much the entry level. It might be known as a Rebel maybe in America, but it was the entry level SLR. Mm-hmm. And I bought the 18 to 55 or whatever it was, kit zoom. Because I didn't know anything about, I knew no one who was into photography. I just thought a zoom was better than a prime. Why would you buy a prime? Like, right, a zoom is better than a prime, right? So then I bought a telephoto and then I thought, I'm sick of swapping out the telephoto and the normal zoom. So I bought another 500N. And so all of a sudden I had, you know, I shot print film in holiday spaces like China, and I shot print film. But then eventually I come around to shooting slide film. And so by about 1997, 98, I was shooting a lot of slide film, went through India and I shot a lot of slide film there, which was a lot of fun. So yeah, I sort of got into it that way. I've actually been married twice, and my first wife, when she was living in Brisbane, she was my fiance. She actually got a job. This is in 1997, 98. She actually got a job at Kodak in Brisbane.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, well, back then it was just like a normal thing, you know, like it wasn't a big deal. But now I'm like, oh, wow, I'm geeking out on it. And she was telling me about her first week at work. And she's like, oh, you know, I went to the mailroom and I went to the loading bay and then I went to the staff photography shop. And then I went, and I'm like, whoa, wait, what was that place you just said? She goes, oh, there's like a staff, you know, photography place where you can buy film cheap. So the next day I put my order in and she's like, oh, you know, what do you want? You want 3 or 4 rolls of film? And I'm like, kind of want a few more rolls of film because I'm going to India soon. She's like, oh, no, you want me to ask for 10 rolls of film? I was like, actually, can you ask for 50 rolls of color transparency film? And she kind of freaked out. And I think she came through with about 30 or 40 rolls from the Kodak staff shop at discount rates. So nice. That's really what I shot for a long time. Yeah, it was good.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And so when digital came in, did you join the digital revolution for a while and are you still shoot some digital or how are you with that?
Yeah, well, I moved to the UK. I went over to marry her in 98 and then we run a cafe together in England in a beautiful town called Shrewsbury. But we had no money and I couldn't even afford to get my film developed anymore. That's how little money we had. But I did some work for someone in about 1999, and they actually gave me 500 quid for this work, £500. And I actually bought a Fujifilm digital camera. It was a little point and shoot. It was like maybe 6 megapixels, which was pretty good at the time. And I actually went to New York. The only time I've been to your beautiful country was the early 2000s. I went to New York with this camera and it was incredible to see a photo on the back of a screen. I know that's everyone takes it for granted, but the first time you see that, it's like mind blown, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So, that was good. So I sort of had that little digital, but obviously, you know, you couldn't change the aperture. It was a bit crap. So I got fully into shooting digital SLRs around 2007-08. It was actually when I split up from my first wife. The first thing I did was went and bought a digital SLR. And then I shot digital for a while, and I went from Canon, I went to Nikon, I had all the big heavy gear. I started doing portraits, in England, and then moved back to Australia. I started doing portraits, but you know what? You're kind of shooting what other people want you to shoot, and it was really boring, and I didn't, you know, it wasn't that fun. It took all the fun out of it, basically. Mm-hmm. All the Nikon equipment was so heavy, and you know, you go out for a day with the family, and you're lugging around, these cameras are so heavy, and you just sort of resent it. But I kind of went through a couple of film renaissances, I guess you could say. So the first one was around 2008. I bought a Rolleiflex when my daughter was just about the time when my daughter was born. I bought a beautiful Rolleiflex, which I still have to this day. Mm. But the other time was in 2011. I actually bought a Fuji, again, this is a digital camera, a Fujifilm X100, which mm-hmm. is a beautiful little one and shoot. Mm-hmm. And because it's got a physical aperture dial and, you know, shutter speed and ISO controls, all that kind of stuff. Actually, I'm not sure the X100 had it all that, but anyway, it had a lot beautiful aperture ring on the camera. It actually got me really interested in film photography again. This is around 2011-12. So I bought a Lomo LCA. I bought a Russian Chaika, which is a half frame camera. So many tears over that camera, I can tell you. But I really got interested in film again. But because of the Chaika, I kind of got scarred. The Chaika looked like it worked perfectly, but three rolls of half frame film, that's a lot of photos.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I was shooting 36 exposures back then on a roll. So 70, you're doing 72 beautifully crafted, you know, diptychs on a half frame roll. And for you to get it processed and then go, buddy, there's nothing on this roll of film. Three times in a row. It kind of broke my film heart a little bit. So it really wasn't until I was about 40, which was, when was I 40? That was 2000. Oh, man, I don't even know what year it is. 2014.
Right.
So around 2014, I'd never been interested in instant photography ever in my entire life. Never. And then when I was 40, I had a bit of a midlife crisis and I become obsessed with Polaroid cameras. So I bought a whole load of Polaroid cameras, some from the United States, some from here in Australia. I've got one, you know, the old ones they used to use in when you used to get your passport photo taken.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got one of them. I got from a chemist down in the south of Australia. So I had all the peel apart cameras. I've got the Integra film cameras. And so I kind of went crazy with all these Polaroids. And again, from the Polaroids, I started collecting other cameras. And then all of a sudden one day I thought, man, I've got to do something with all these cameras. And that's when I got the idea for doing a podcast.
Mm. So, and basically, what I like about your podcast is it's not just like a normal camera view sort of. You actually kind of talk about your experience with shooting it personally, and you have like your own little kind of grading system about what you thought about the camera, and you even go through like some photos that you took with that camera and kind of explain what you like about it and what and how the camera helped or hurt in that situation. And I think it's a different take on just kind of your sterile camera views that sometimes you might get on a lot of podcasts. So yeah.
Oh, that's good to hear. The thing is, I'm not very especially with digital camera reviews. You read a review and they're talking about they do really close ups of the grain of the digital camera ISO 12,000. I'm like, man, I don't even know how to do that. I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. I just like to take a camera out, see what results I get with, and play. You know what I mean? A lot of the really technical stuff, it goes over my head. To be honest, know if I like a camera, pick it up and shoot with it. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool that it's more of a personal spin on the review rather than just like, oh, this has a 1/8,000th of shutter speed and So yeah.
I think
I threw my Leica voice in there because that's what my Leica does.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Because it does have a 1/8,000th of shutter speed. Oh, yeah, man. Oh, you got a pretty decent Leica voice yourself. Huh?
I've got a great Leica voice. I haven't bought one yet, but I'm practicing my voice. Hey, I've got a Leica like Mike Gerdeman now. I can go to Seattle in the rain, my Leica M6. Yeah. So
you got it down. I like it. I think you're ready, man. I think it's time. All you gotta do now is open up that wallet. So that's the actually what you really need to do is just keep doing that podcast, and maybe some fine listener will send you one like they did me. So that's maybe
very true. So, Yeah. By the time I get to episode 200, it'll be, I think, I'll, you know, it'll be like the year 2100 by the time I get to episode 200. So
that could be, that's possibly true. But let's see. Okay. So now that we've kind of heard a little bit about Matt, I think we should probably move on to what we kind of, the first segment. So what we did this week, and we usually start with Andre. So our replacement for Andre is Mr. Bryce Randall. So Bryce, what have you done this week? Anything photography related that's been interesting?
Honestly, no. You know, I have been, it sounds pretty terrible. So I'm in the middle of redoing my dark room. So that's kind of where my focus has been with my free time. And, you know, here with the weather being nice, I've, you know, BMX is my second passion. With the brutal winter we've had, I've been really trying to soak up the bike riding the most I can. But as far as photography related, I'm, like I said, I'm redoing my darkroom down the sub basement of this house. You know, it's going to be down there next to my water heater and furnace now. Mm-hmm. But I've had it for 2 years in my garage. I portioned off the back half of my garage for it. And it's been great, but like this winter, you know, it was so cold, it kind of made it hard to go out there and work. I couldn't keep the space warm enough with what I had. And in the sub-basement, it's insulated, and it's already light-tight. There's no windows down there.
That's good.
And it's already showing the bare bones. You know, the studs are open, so I'm able to place electrical outlets wherever I want. And the plumbing has easy access, so it's going to be pretty easy to do myself, I think. But it's just trying to squeeze it in, and the little bit of time you get after work and on the weekends when we're not busy.
Right. And also, I'm going to have to put some pressure on you. I guess when you get that dark room going, we can maybe see a little resurrection of that podcast, maybe. What's going with that?
Yeah. I was afraid you were going to bring that up. You know, I don't want to kill it, because, you know, I fully intend on getting back to it one day, but it's, you know, finding the time to do it with everything else. You know, sometimes by the end of my, you know, when I'm spent a whole day in the dark room working, I'm a little tapped out by the end of it and don't want to talk about it.
Right. Yeah. It's, in case you folks don't know, Bryce started a podcast, Under the Safe Light, and, that's correct, right? I did get that right, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And anyway, how many did you put out? 4 or 5, something like that, maybe?
I think I got like 5 or 6 episodes. And honestly, you know, I didn't really think anyone listened to it. And I get random messages on Instagram saying, hey, I like the podcast. You know, when's it going to come back? So it's got me motivated to put another episode out, but I just need to do something worthwhile talking about.
Yeah. Well, you were the one that experimented with doing some color darkroom work, right?
So, I spent all of 5 hours working on the RE4 process. Right. And I can't say I'm going to go back to it.
Well, I gotta say, man, it took some balls of steel to even try it. So you should get props for that. And I think that's a podcast episode waiting to be recorded right there. So there you go. But
oh yeah, no, it was definitely fun. I think if you guys have the means to do it, it's worth trying. Mm-hmm. If anything, it just gives you more respect for the printing inkjet after that, because I got some success out of it, but I think black and white's just more fun.
Yeah, yeah. I must say, go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, I'm really jealous of your American houses, because they all seem to have attics and basements and all this kind of really cool stuff. And my kids watch all these American shows and like, why can't we have an attic or a basement?
Yeah, I got to say, I don't have a basement. My first house did. And then when we moved in this house, I realized how quickly I missed, I missed not having a basement. I mean, I do have the man cave, but, like you said, Bryce, it would be difficult to make a dark room out here, 'cause it gets so cold out here in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah.
So it's
where do you live, Bryce?
What's that?
Say what?
Where does Bryce live?
I live in Kansas City, Missouri, and you're talking about basements, you know. It's a necessity around here because we live in quote unquote tornado alley. Mm-hmm. So, wow. You know, most of the houses in this area have basements, but like, I think going down to Texas to visit my grandparents, like you start, you know, you're not seeing them as much. I'm not sure how it is in your neck of the woods, Mike.
Yeah, it's well, you know, you mentioned Tornado Alley. It makes me think, remember this. I just saw a news report recently that because of the, I'm not sure this probably doesn't address what you just asked me, Bryce, but I just saw this news story where because of the climate change and stuff, that Tornado Alley is actually moving towards my area. So you might, you guys might be getting a reprieve, and now we might get in it now.
Could be.
I don't know. So yeah. But it's
we have to go underground with your basement. Your Gutterman cave will have to go underground. Yeah,
I know. I'm gonna have to dig like a bunker or something, man. Maybe I'll make it like a tornado bunker / darkroom underground. So yeah,
there you
that won't be pricey or anything. So, but yeah, all right, Bryce, is that pretty much what you got?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, Matt, what have you been up to this week, man?
Well. Unusually, I've got a kind of a good story to tell. 1 week ago today, so it just sneaks in for the my week. We were on holiday in beautiful Indonesia. So we went for 12 nights to Bali and Java in Indonesia, which is around a 6-hour flight from Brisbane. And so I was shooting lots of cool film photos over in beautiful Bali a week ago before coming home. So I took quite a few cameras with me. And as can be predicted, I only used around half of them. But I've got all the beautiful Polaroids. I took one of my Polaroid 6 SLR 680s with me, and I took about 7 packs of Polaroid film, and I shot 3.5 of them. And pretty happy with them. I absolutely love Polaroid photos, and I'm just having them in my hands as I'm talking to you now, looking through them. They're not the best Polaroids ever, but some of them are just absolutely beautiful. I love the way, the emulsions look, even the new emulsions, they look fantastic. So I was shooting some cool film photos in Indonesia. I also took my Olympus LT1, which is was a subject of a review in episode 4 of my podcast. I actually dropped it recently, but it is still going, I think. I think it's going okay. I was down in Sydney, and I put my – I always have terrible – I don't know if you guys do this, but you know when you put a camera – it's got a camera strap, and you put it around over your wrist? Mm-hmm. I always have bad luck doing that, because one day in Sydney when I was down there, I put the LT1 over my wrist when I was using my Polaroid. And the strap broke because it's the camera's so old, and it smashed all over the floor. And it's about third time. Yeah. But I think just the battery compartment came off. So I've used a bit of electrical tape and put it back up. So I think the camera's working okay. But when I was in Indonesia, it did rewind after about 6 frames on one roll, which was really weird. But then the next roll was okay. Yeah. And then my other... The only other camera I really shot, I shot some digital over there, of course, but the only other film camera I took a lot of images with was my Fujifilm Class S, man. So this is the camera. This is the point and shoot. It cost me $1,000 for this camera. And someone actually messaged me. It was Matthew Joseph, who's a hanger-on of the Sunny 16 podcast. I think... He listened to my podcast and saying that I bought a Fujifilm Class S point and shoot for $1,000, and he just sent me a vomit emoji by direct message, as if to say, "How could you spend $1,000 on a point and shoot?" But there you go.
Well, I mean, you know, that's kind of the name of the game with the fancy point and shoots, you know. But they seem to command some premium prices now. So that's, you know, hey, if it's a camera you wanted, man, and you can afford it, I don't see any problem with it. You know, that's the way I look at it. But yeah. As far as the Polaroids, I meant to ask you, like, do you prefer the color or the black and white on the Polaroid?
Oh, color. Definitely color. I think I'm an unusual breed in photographers who listen to your show, because a lot of people love black and white, which is great. But, I love color everything. So, yeah.
Okay. Do you shoot much black and white at all?
No. A lovely listener of my show, who's actually a listener of your show as well, Alan, who's at The Film Sweats on Instagram, he actually sent me like 8 bulk rolled rolls of black and white film recently. I was blown away. He was so kind to do that. So I do really want to shoot some more black and white. Mm-hmm. And I do shoot some black and white instant as well, but that's on my list of things to do this year, shoot some more black and white.
So where you're at, is the climate like pretty much always warm, or do you have a much of a winter, or I'm not sure about geography, but It's pretty much warm all the time, or?
By European or North American standards, probably. Right. It's pretty much from October through till March, it's really hot and humid. So it's probably like, you know, around 90 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, it's about 30 degrees. It doesn't sound that hot, but it's a lot of people who come to Brisbane from other parts of Australia will say, oh my God, it's so humid in Brisbane. That's the thing that makes it feel hotter. Yeah. So it's the humidity. And around this time of year, April, it gets a bit cooler. It's still like 26, which is about, I don't know what's that, in the 70s maybe in Fahrenheit. But it does get a bit rainier. And it's, the winters are beautiful. They're just, you know, it's sunny, blue skies, and a bit chilly in the evening. But like I said, by European standards, it's nothing. I remember when I was at uni, when I was about 20, everyone in Brisbane, it was in July, and it was about maybe 20 degrees, which was, it's about double it now. I think that's about 70 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe.
Yes.
And we were all in jumpers, something like that, yeah. And all of a sudden, I was in the city waiting for my bus, and all of a sudden, there was these two blonde guys, big muscly guys, walking down the street with just shorts on, like they had shirts off. And everyone was like, staring at them, who are these weird, like, it's freezing. And they were actually, when they walked past, they were talking, they were either Swedish or Norwegian. But they obviously thought it was a beautiful, you know, summer's day.
Right.
And everyone else was wearing like jackets and scarves and jumpers. So, yeah.
Yeah. I guess when you're used to it being warm most of the time, I think your blood gets a little thinner, man. And absolutely. I think that's why I hate winter so much, because my blood stays thin from probably all the alcohol I consume. So that's probably why I hate winter so much. But I guess it makes sense why you like color so much, because it seems like you kind of have better colors year round than we possibly do where I'm at. But
possibly, yeah.
Yeah. We do have crazy hot summers here and humidity. I'm sure you probably have the same where you're at, right, Bryce?
Oh, yeah. It gets very humid.
Yeah,
you know, 100 degrees and it's hard to breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel like you're swimming when you walk outside.
Yeah, it's like walking outside to a hot, wet blanket. So yeah.
Oh yeah, it's horrendous.
Yeah, but okay. Is that pretty much what you've got going on, Matt?
That was pretty much it. So the rest of the week, I've just got my rolls here. I've got my rolls of 35 to get processed. I've got a couple of rolls of Kodak Gold 200. One of them's only got those six exposures on, sadly, because it rewound. But I got a roll of Cinestill 800 I shot. And I got a roll of Superior 1600 I shot as well. So I'm looking forward to getting them back when I get my development done.
Nice. So you're not home developing yet, or do you have any plans to do that?
No. You know, I feel like a failure listening to your show, because everyone develops their own film at home, and because I'm not from that background, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm you know, it's a challenge for me to get the roll of film in the camera sometimes, you know what I mean? So I've got to learn how to do it. I've actually, I just listened to Sherry Christensen's new podcast, and episode two, she talks about how she started doing it herself. So that was really inspirational, and that's on my list of things to do this year, try to do it myself at home.
Yeah, you'll find that it's much simpler and a lot less scary than what it may look like on paper or whatever. And I remember Sherry, when she was really going through some film sweats about it when she first started. I remember one night she sent me a lot of direct messages asking me some questions, because she was getting ready to develop like her first role, I think, of black and white, and was really, really kind of sweating about it. But then like an hour or so later, she sent me a message that it was successful and or whatever. So yeah, it was I do like the fact that, I mean, she was kind of motivated, I think, from a lot of people in the community helping her and stuff. And the people on the Facebook group were real helpful to her and stuff. So it's been they got her into it, and she's pretty self-sufficient with it now. So I'm proud of her for that. And her podcast is coming along very good. What was it called? Oh, shoot. And now I'm going to forget the name of her podcast. And every time I have
on the spot. Is it Embrace the Grain?
Days of Embrace the Grain. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Embrace the Grain. Yeah. And she's got four episodes out now, I think, something like that. So,
yeah. And she only had three when I listened, but she must have, she's getting them out pretty quick. So she'll be overtaking me in about 3 days.
Yeah. I think she posted something that the fourth one is almost in the can or something like that. So, but definitely check out her podcast, Embrace the Grain. She's doing a fine job. And she's definitely, I'm proud of her and I'm glad that she's doing it. But what sort of irritates me is everybody wife starts these podcasts and they don't stumble over the words like I do. So I just, and even you, Matt, like you sound all professional and stuff. Sherry sounds a professional. And here I am like, I don't know.
So, well, one of the things that I say on mine all the time is, oh, there you go. And I listen back to I'd walk the dog, right? And I listen to the podcast I've just recorded, and that's wrong. Why did I put that bit of info in there? And then I said that word in a stupid way. So I actually go back and edit it to make myself sound better, you know?
Well, maybe that's my situation. I'm too lazy to really edit, but I could make it sound more professional. But at 225 episodes in, why change it now? So, but it's not like exactly. I'm going to fool anybody at this point. All right. So, I guess I'll go ahead and get into my week, and it's been a crazy week. And if anybody's been following me on the Facecast and stuff, I had a pretty crazy week. But I'll start off with some positives here. I did manage to finally shoot and develop my first row from the Leica R8, and so I got that row developed and scanned. Haven't got the photos edited a little bit. There's some minor tweaks I need to do to them, but that I do to pretty much all my photos just because they're straight scans or whatever. But I'm super happy with it. I shot a row of the Kodak 5222, the double X in that camera, and I can say, I'm not going to say it like sharpness wise that it blows away like a Pentax 50 millimeter, prime lens or anything, but I can say, yes, the photos are sharp. So there is something to Leica glass. I'll give it that. And man, it was just a blast to shoot. And I think it's probably going to definitely become one of my favorite cameras and favorite things to shoot. Cause I just really enjoyed using it. And, the photos came out great. Everything was exposed, fantastically. So, looking forward to, kind of posting some of those photos, sometime this week, hopefully. And, so that was a big win to finally get a row shot through that camera that I've been trying. I was, hoping that, I could get a full day out to shoot with it, and finally kind of did. And it lived up to its expectations. So that was good news. But the other camera that I shot that I finally finished the row, developed the film and got it scanned was a Lomo LCA. And I wanted one of these cameras for a long time. Yeah. And so I shot a roll of Ektar 100 in there. I kind of wanted a real punchy film to see if some of the Lomo characteristic supposed color saturation would show up. And, it's weird. It's some of the photos look like it was taken with any other normal compact camera. But other photos did have that Lomo kind of look, that you kind of expect from what you've seen kind of stereotypically out of the LCA or whatever, with the little bit of the vignetting and some of the kind of color pop or whatever. I think the next row I shoot in that, I'm going to throw in a row of slide film and cross process and go full Lomo style with it and see if that maybe brings out a little more of the characteristics that camera is kind of famous for. But it was really weird. Some of them could have been taken with any other compact camera. Some of them had this unique look, and I can imagine that it's probably something to do with the aperture that the camera chose at the time. And I'm thinking when it chooses like the wider apertures, it has more of the vignetting than some of the times when maybe the scene was brighter and it maybe chose a smaller aperture or whatever. Like an f8 or f16 or whatever it might choose. I think those are kind of maybe cutting out some of the vignetting or whatever you get out of the camera. It's just my theory, because some of those shots kind of looked a little bit just like it could have been taken with any compact camera. But one thing I will say about it is, I don't know why I had trouble with this. I misfocused on a lot of the photos. And the only reason I can think of is, well, I'm used to SLRs. Or when I do use a compact camera like that, they're either like focus-free or they're autofocus. And I think a lot of times I just kept forgetting to change the zone focusing switch. There's like three or four settings for focus on that. And a lot of times I just forgot to change that, just because I was so used to other point and shoots that I have where you just lift it up and press the shot and let the camera do it. And so I haven't really trained myself to get used to using the zone focusing thing there. So I think that's why I miss focus on some of them. But that's all right. It's a little bit of a learning experience there. But the weird thing is when I use my Hoga, which I did shoot a row through that this week, and man, those came out fantastic. Every time I shoot a Hoga, it amazes me every single time. And I just got some shots I really like on that on the ROA shot roll through a T-Max 100 on through the Hoga, and man, they just got some really good shots I really like out of that thing. Every time it just amazes me, like that stupid little plastic piece of junk, and like it always at least one or two shots every row comes out kind of magical, man. And I'd like to say it's my talent, but no, it's just there's some magic in those little things, man. So, but the weird thing is on a Hoga, I always remember to do the focus, you know, you get like three or four focus settings in there. I don't know how much that really matters on that camera, but I always seem to have the center sharp in the Hoga shots. And of course, you know, it blurs as it goes out to the edges. That's just the characteristic of it. But I do seem to like nail focus in the center on the Hoga quite often. Just got to get used to doing that on that LCA. So it's going to be more of a learning experience trying to use the LCA. And like I said, next time, slide film, cross-processing, go full LOMO style and see what I get out of it. But and the other thing is, I did a face cast about this is, you know, it's been kind of a hell week. And I just wanted to thank everybody in the community that's reached out to me and sent a lot of nice messages and stuff. Basically, Friday, we had my grandmother's funeral. And after leaving the funeral, we were going to a dinner that was right down the road from the funeral home. And all the participants of the funeral were going there to have a dinner. And on the way there, a truck pulled out of a side parking lot and hit my dad's truck and knocked him into a ditch, totaled his vehicle. And we drive up on the scene. There's fire trucks everywhere, ambulances, cops, and all three members of my family, my dad, my mom, my sister were in the truck in a ditch, turned over on its side, and it looked really awful. It looked really, really bad, and was an extremely frightening thing to drive upon. And basically, the guy that hit them was a hit and run. He left the scene, so that made it a little more of an anger issue as well, because the guy wasn't even responsible enough to check to see if anybody was okay. He just fled the scene, which is a pretty low thing to do in my opinion, but he still hasn't been caught at this point. But anyway, it turns out, all my family is, they went to the ER and they're all out now. My mom just got released today. So everybody seems to be fine. And, so, you know, the positive of this is, hey, you know, it was a bad thing, but, look at the positive side. Everybody's okay. All we lost is a truck that my dad just paid off, but so that kind of stinks. But one interesting thing that came out of it is we posted on the Facebook group trying to get anybody to, or not the Facebook group, on just general Facebook, a bunch of us posted trying to see if anybody saw any witnesses to this accident, because the road was, I mean, it was a very busy time of day, seeing if anybody could come forward and help us identify who drove the truck that was in, that did the hit and run or whatever. And through this, one of the local TV stations found out about it and reached out to me yesterday and came over to my house with a TV camera and put me on the 11 o'clock local news, the headline story. So talking about the accident and trying to see if anybody that watches the newscast might have any information, and told them the police hotline number to call if they have any information about it. We haven't heard if anybody's come forward yet, but we're kind of very thankful for the local news to come out here and put my ugly mug on local television, which was very odd. You know, I used to be in TV, and I used to be on, I used to do a cable access show, so I'm used to seeing myself on a screen, but it's been a while. And yeah, it was a little odd to see yourself on a local newscast talking about this, but it was definitely an interesting part of my week. But again, so many people reached out and have just been, so many well wishes and all that stuff. And I just can't thank everybody in the community enough. It just shows just how cool this community is and supportive in all aspects of not just your photography, but your life in general. And I think it's a real amazing thing. And I can't thank you guys enough. It's really, really been kind of the best thing about doing this show is getting to know all these fine people out there. And the fact that everyone seems to really care about what's going on in each other's lives and stuff. I think it's a very special thing, and it's very unique, and you don't see this in a lot of photography communities. And I think it's something we should all be very proud of. And I certainly am. So again, thanks to everybody that reached out on that. So, but yeah, everybody's okay. So, everything came out pretty good considering the circumstances. So, that's the good news. So, but just want to get that out there. So, okay, I think that's pretty much our weeks. And so I think we'll take a break right now, and we're going to come back with questions from the Facebook group to Mr. Matt Murray. So let's take a break, and we will be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back from the break. And as usual, when we have a guest on the show, we ask people from the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group to kind of pose some questions to whatever guests we're having on Sunday night. And again, the group came through with flying colors. There's a lot of questions here. And my goal of trying to make these shows around 90 minutes has been failing miserably. But that's fine, because you find folks keep coming up with great questions. So we'll see how long the show will be. Maybe it'll be 2 hours again, like usual. We'll see. But let's go ahead and get into these. Bryce, what's the first question we have for Matt?
All right. It looks like and I'm sorry if I butcher some names here, but I see it's Alex Luck.
That's Laux.
Laux. Yeah. Okay. He asks, what is your most loved camera?
Oh, that is a tricky one. My most loved camera. Can I hedge my bets and choose a digital one as well? Or is that not allowed on Negative Positives?
Well, I mean, it just depends on if you want, like, you know, people with pitchforks and torches outside your house. But yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So my most loved camera at the moment, I've got a few. So one of them is, I mentioned earlier, I've got a beautiful gray, a Rolleiflex gray T. And I had one owner when I bought it in England, and I actually sent it away to a guy in England who used to work in the Rolly factory, and he did a CLA on it. And he sent it back to me, and he wrote a little handwritten note, and he put, this is a beautiful camera, take care of it. So that's one of my favorite cameras, my Rolly. But I also like my Fujifilm Class S, which I just bought last year. It's a great little camera, fits in my hand. It's a beautifully designed camera. It's got a lot of features. And you know what? If I could only choose one camera, though, it would have to be a Polaroid, I think. I just love the magic of Polaroid and instant photography.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. It's funny. I did forget to mention, in my week, I shot a TLR for the first time. And now, granted, my TLR is not known to be a grand one or anything. It's a Kodak Reflex 2. And and I thought it's a beautiful camera. I love the way it looks, but it was painful shooting those 12 shots. Like, I am not a TLR guy. Now, granted, my screen is probably not as bright as some of the better ones. So I thought real issues focusing. Turns out I focused everything. Once I developed the film and scanned it, everything was in good focus. So I did a better job than I thought. But man, it slowed. I'm all for slowing down and stuff, but it slowed me down so much, man. I don't know if I'm going to be a TLR guy or not. I bought this pretty cheap just to see if I was. And I'll probably keep it just because it ain't really worth much, and it looks pretty, but I don't know if I can be a TLR guy. You know, it's just, yeah.
It's a hard process, because as well, like, I love shooting, you know, with if my point and shoots or my digital stuff, I like shooting, you know, F2, F2.8. And so you think with a TLR, you think, oh yeah, like, you've got the whole looking down and everything's backwards kind of problem mm-hmm. to contend with. And then I always try and do the shallow depth of field, but yeah. I always end up missing focus half the time. So I'm not really sure with my eyes that I'm supposed to be shooting these things at F3.5. I think I should probably broaden it out a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I shot a couple of portraits at F3.5, and, surprisingly got the focus right on them, but, that was shocking to me, so I did better than I thought. But I thought there's no way these things are in focus. Like, I'm guessing here at this point, but I actually was looking at the distance meter or distance, guidelines on the lens, just to kind of verify a little bit if I'm even in the ballpark, because that's how far off I thought I might be. So, but yeah, probably not for me, but all right. So let's go on to the next question.
Okay. Well, for the next question, Nigel Cliff asks, is there anything specific that attracts you to a particular camera?
Well, certainly Looking around my home office here, I've got cameras. I got cameras, film, slides. I got stuff. It looks like the place has been ransacked. There's just stuff everywhere. I've got to tidy up. But I do love, it's probably a few different categories of cameras I love. So I love point and shoots, even though they, as Mike was saying earlier, you know, with the focus, it can be frustrating. It's different to an SLR where you're not sure sometimes whether you've got something in focus or not, depending on what the camera is doing. But I love a good point and shoot. I love instant photography. On my shelf, I've got, I probably got 8, 10, 12 Polaroids on my shelf. Love instant photography, love Polaroids, love Instax. And I love toy cameras as well. I've also got medium format and other rangefinders, bits and bobs, but I guess they're the ones that I love the most. And I'm actually intrigued, Mike, that you're getting good images out of your Holga. I've heard a few people say that. I actually bought a Diana. Have you guys ever used a Diana before?
I have. I had the Lomography version, the Diana, the F Plus or something plus, like yeah. that.
And how did you go?
I did not get along with it. I ended up selling it because in my Hogas, I have two of them. Both of them, the center is pretty damn sharp. And then, yep. Of course, then it blurs towards the edges. The Diana was not very sharp in the center and of course the edges were blurry, but even the center was not all that sharp. And then there was frame spacing issues and there was it's a lot of stuff with it. And I just, for that kind of look, I prefer the Holga. So, yeah. Bryce, have you ever shot any of those?
I have not. You know, I'm not into those kind of cameras so much. Mm-hmm. I like sharp photos. I like predictable results. So I always stick with like my Hasselblad or my Nikons.
I'm surprised you didn't say Hasselblad in a little bit more, luxurious voice. But,
I'm not sure we're on the level of Leica users yet.
So do you have any toy cameras, Matt, at this point, other than do you have a Diana or
I have a Diana. I shot two rolls of film on it last May. They were two of the worst rolls of film I've ever shot in my entire life. I thought it was my fault, but then some of the things that you've just mentioned, Mike, were exactly what happened to me. Frame spacing issues. Oh man, it was just a terrible film. I really resented paying money to get it developed. It was so bad.
Yeah.
But looking at my shelf, I've got a. Have you guys heard of the Blackbird Fly?
Yes.
So I've got a beautiful red Blackbird Fly, actually bought from America, even though they're Japanese. So I've got that. It's a 35mm TLR, and you can take the mask out, and it exposes all the sprockets when you shoot. It's a really fun, cool camera. Not fun to shoot with, but it's fun to look at, and I love the images. So I'll be doing an episode of Matt Loves Cameras on the Blackbird Fly soon. I've got this book. I've actually got it right here in front of me. It's called Toy Cameras. I've had it for like 10 years and it's by a guy called Kevin Meredith. You can probably still get it on Amazon or something like that. But I've actually realized, I kind of read these books before I go to bed. And then about a week later, I'll buy a camera on eBay. That looks cool. And then I look back in the book and go, oh man, it's actually in this book. So I think it's kind of seeping into my brain and I've actually got quite a few of them now. So I've got a Golden Half, which is a half frame camera. Mm-hmm. I've got a split cam. I've got action samplers. I've got all sorts of ones from this book. I've got about 8 or 10 cameras from this book now. All sorts of fun, plasticky, silly cameras. So yeah, I'm looking forward to shooting some of them.
Yeah, I've got quite a few of those myself. But it seems like I'm always either going with the Holga. But actually, my other favorite one is not even necessarily considered a toy camera, maybe, but just the Kodak Brownie Hawkeye.
Nice.
But what I like about doing with that is flipping the lens on it, and it gives you that weird, almost Holga like swirliness around the edges, but a little bit different look than what the Holga gives. It's a little more swirly looking, or I don't know, it kind of looks like you were drunk when you took the photo, but it has a unique look. I like flipping the lens on a Brownie Hawkeye, and it kind of gives you definitely a different, kind of a similar Holga look, but different. And I think that's a lot of fun too. And you can pick those up so dirt cheap because they made like a bazillion of them. So yeah, it's a good one to pick up. So, all right. So Bryce, what we got next?
All right. It looks like Jason Konopinski.
Konopinski.
Yes.
I hope I got that right. I said it like I knew, but
yeah, it's better than what I got. What is the first camera that really helped you express your creative vision?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I was going to choose some really cool, sexy camera. But when I was thinking about this answer, I've already alluded to it. When I got back from Europe and I was using my Pentax Zoom 90WR, it was just I got rid of it, and I bought a Canon EOS 500N. So this is the entry level Canon SLR, and I think that was really the first camera where I felt like, wow, I'm changing the aperture, I'm doing night shots with, you know, bulb mode. And so I think that was the first camera that got me hooked on photography. So that entry level camera, I think it's called a Rebel in the States, but here it was called the 500N. I think that was it. That was really the first one I think that captured my imagination.
Nice. Yeah. My first camera that I bought with my own money was like a plastic 1990s Pentax autofocus, you know, camera, but it had controllers for aperture and shutter speed. It had manual options and all that. And I still have a soft spot in my heart for that camera because I basically learned, I shot a lot of rolls of film on that damn thing. And like, I really did. It's kind of the first camera that got me into serious photography. So I don't have it anymore because that particular line of Pentax is known to have like issues with a mirror gear, like failing. So I kind of got rid of it before that happened. And I'm afraid to pick up another one, even because out of nostalgia, I kind of would like to pick up another one, but I was like, man, I know I mean, you can get them cheap, but still know that if that gear hasn't failed yet, it's going to. So it's just inevitable on that particular series. And it's, once it does that, it's a paperweight. So, I don't know, Bryce, how would you answer that question?
You know, probably not the way you guys did. Honestly, the first camera that really helped me was just my first DSLR that I ever got was the Nikon D40. And I know, it's digital, but I mean, you know, I played around with film in high school and stuff like that, but it wasn't ever anything serious. And when I first decided to start taking some art classes in college, I picked up the digital camera on a Black Friday, and you know, I've been shooting with a digital point and shoot camera and trying to caption action, you know, BMX and stuff like that. And I don't know if you ever tried to shoot sports with a digital point and shoot, but it's very frustrating with the shutter lag you know, the motion blur. So that's really how I learned about, you know, being able to freeze action and later on got into flash photography, and I took everything I learned with that camera and I've applied it now to film. And I think it's given me a lot more confidence now with, especially like shooting with off camera flashes. I don't feel the need to double check it with a digital camera. I can just, you know, I trust what I do now and can set up the lights and everything and usually get decent results.
Yeah, Bryce, there were some photos you posted. It might have been, it's been several months ago. It's been a while. I think it was BMX, and the way they came out, it looked like they're almost like he was on the moon. And you know what photos I'm talking about?
Oh yeah.
Those are so awesome, man. Like, how in the hell did you pull that off? Like
lots of practice. You know, riding BMX makes it. You know, I can see the perfect moment to take the picture. You know, I know the trick, so I know when to take the photo. And honestly, that night was kind of a shot in the dark because I actually forgot my flash meter at home. And so we're out there, it's pitch black outside with, you know, just like parking lot lights lighting the skate park. So everything that you see in the photo is pretty much from the two flashes. I was kind of just winging it, and I said, all right, well, I know if I set my flash 15 feet away on this side and 10 feet away on this side, I normally use this exposure. So we'll try this and hope it works.
Right.
And Tri-X is so forgiving.
Yeah. They're amazing, man. I was very impressed with those, man. Good job. So
that's the black and white one, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Amazing.
Awesome. All right. Bryce, what do we got? What we got next?
So looks like this one is from Eric Reese or Rice.
Maybe it's Rissy. It might be Rissy. I don't know. We're just going to put a bunch of pronunciations out there.
Yeah, there we go.
When I was right.
What's your favorite American camera? Retinas are German and don't count.
Oh, that's easy. Anything made by the Polaroid Corporation.
There you go.
So, yeah. So the SX70 or the – I flip a coin between the SX70 and the Polaroid SLR 680. And here's a question for you guys. If you could only choose cameras from one country, which country would it be?
Oh, gosh. Wow. Yikes. Huh.
House of Loud's made in Sweden, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Sweden?
Yeah, that'd have to go with that.
Man, it's hard for me because, you know, I'm a union factory worker in the United States, so I'm supposed to say USA, but that would give up, like, it would be hard to find a USA-made SLR, which I prefer SLRs. I don't think there is, even is a USA SLR.
What have you got from the USA? You've got your all your Kodak Instamatics, you've got your Speed Graphics, your Crown Graphics,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
Polaroids.
Yeah.
Not many SLRs,
yeah.
though.
No, there's a lot of, you know, from the 50s, there's a lot of, you know, kind of smaller compact 35 millimeters, like rangefinders and stuff like that. Man, as much as I hate to say it, being a made in USA guy, because, you know, my job depends on it, I'd probably go Germany. But
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say Japan.
Well, probably Japan. Yeah, Pentax. Gosh, it's a toss up. But, you know, yeah. If I was rich, I'd say Germany. But with my current status, I mean, I probably might have to go to Japan and just stick with my Pentax. So it's probably a good point. Yeah.
See, because I love Polaroids, I would usually say the USA because I love Polaroids so much. However, I'm going to cheat. I can actually say Japan because the Polaroid SLR 690 was actually made in Japan.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
right.
I can kind of cheat and say Japan. And then I get my Fujifilm cameras and all the point and Olympus, all the point and shoots, everything.
Are you aware of any Australian cameras? Have you ever seen or heard of any? Was there any camera manufacturing there?
I know we made a lot of film. So there was a Kodak plant in Melbourne for many, many years. Mm. Did we make any cameras? I think they were locally produced. Maybe some locally produced cameras here, but I think everything was imported pretty much, the vast majority of them, I believe. There's probably some Aussie camera nerd out there who's going to be screaming at their podcast player right now, "You idiot, what about blah, blah, blah?" Right. Not that I know of, yeah. Which is why over here, it's actually like us Aussies, we look at, you know, European and North American Facebook groups. Oh, I just picked up a Rolleiflex. I just picked up a Leica for $10 at the thrift store. And we're just like, oh, man. Like, seriously, nothing like that ever happens here.
Right. Wow. That's a tough question. Yeah. So, okay. So what we got next, Bryce?
All right. So Erickson Jacob asks, have you seen a camera featured in a movie that you liked? For instance, in the sense, oh, that's cool. A such and such camera. Or in the sense that a camera, oh, sorry.
There you go. Sorry.
Or in the sense that a camera had an important role in the movie.
Well, Bryce, you're going to love this answer because I recently rewatched The Beach, which is a film, I don't know how old it is, 15, 20 years old, with a good old mate, Leo DiCaprio, in. I think he's a great actor, Leo. I think he's been overlooked for many years. I think he's finally got an Oscar, though, hasn't he?
Yeah.
The Beach is a film, it was a book. The book was really good. The movie wasn't as good, but it's about these backpackers in Southeast Asia. And there's a really beautiful scene when Leo is on the beach with his love interest and they're shooting the night sky. And I don't know what camera it is. However, I believe it is a Hasselblad. Because, you know, when you're backpacking around Southeast Asia, of course, you've got a Hasselblad in your backpack, right?
Right.
But they're on the beach and they have this Hasselblad on a tripod and they're doing all the star trails. And I thought that was really cool.
Oh, that is cool. I do remember that movie. Yeah, it's a decent movie. But all right. What's next, Bryce?
Let's see. Sherry Christensen asks, how do you decide which cameras you want to review? There are so many out there to choose from.
There are so many to choose from in my home office. That's pretty much what I'm doing. And I'm usually thinking, oh man, I've got so much bloody cameras here. I need to sell some. So which one am I going to try and do next so I can get rid of it? But I usually fall in love with it and keep it anyway. So it's just, I guess I've got quite a lot to choose from here, and I'm trying to mix it up in between instant 35 mil. But I desperately need to get some medium format cameras on my show, really.
Do you see a point where you're going to run out of cameras that you own to review? And you're like, well, I mean, I got to keep the podcast going. Sorry, honey, I've got to buy some more cameras. Like,
not at the current rate of my podcast, which is one or two a month. No problem at all. Unfortunately, a lot of them are very similar. So, you know, I'm looking up at 12 cameras, which are all Polaroids, all very similar ones. So, I don't think I'll have a problem for at least another year before I need any more cameras.
Nice. All right, what we got next?
So Ben Mill asks, Matt, you're clearly a family man from your podcast intro. Have you got them shooting film yet? And another question, have you used those awesome post boxes that Hillvale have set up? Appreciate they might not be in your city, but thought I'd ask as it seems like such a freaking ace idea.
Yeah, so Hillvale are a lab in Melbourne, and they have these drop boxes set up. So if you, I don't know much about it. Let's have a look on the. So basically, I think you just drop off your film at any of these locations, like there's bookstores and stuff like that, or there's a hotel, which a hotel here is like a pub, a hotel, or is a bagel place or a coffee place, and you just drop your film off at one of these places. They collect the film, and then instead of having to go to the film store, that's what this company do. So no, I don't live in Melbourne. Melbourne's about a 2-hour flight away. But Melbourne is pretty much a lot of cool film stuff is going on in Melbourne. That's probably the heart of film photography, I'd say, in Australia. Although there's film people in every big city, but there's a lot of cool, funky stuff going on in Melbourne. And what was the first part of the... Oh, yeah. Have I got my kids shooting? So my daughter has had an Instax for a number of years. We actually made a mistake when we gave her the Instax a few years ago. We gave her the Instax and then went... Don't shoot too much film because it's $1 a sheet, which is just the most stupid thing. Why buy a kid a camera if they can't shoot the film, right? So we've actually come around and for our latest holiday, she actually wanted, she's getting a bit old now. She's almost 11. She wanted an Instax with a selfie mirror on, right? Mm-hmm. So I bought her the latest Instax Mini 9. And I bought 100 sheets of film. And so she shot quite a bit of Instax in Indonesia, and she kind of enjoyed it. I think she got a bit frustrated. Sometimes Instax, the conditions don't always suit, you know, what you're trying to take a photo of, and that the images might not come out very well. If you're taking someone right in front of you, they come out beautifully. I think she took one of an animal, and it didn't really come out very well, and she was a bit despondent. And then she nicked my Fujifilm X100F. And she says to me, oh, Dad, can I have a Fujifilm for my birthday? And I'm like, oh, man, it's like a $1,500 camera, you know. they kind of like playing around with the cameras, but they're not mega into it. But my daughter has got a bit of she kind of likes photography a little bit. But I think they kind of see it at the moment as Dad's thing more than theirs.
Yeah, yeah. So I got two points about this. First of all, I mentioned on the podcast, I took my sons out shooting recently, and it was super fun. And the nice thing was they were shooting 35mm film, which when you develop yourself, it doesn't cost too much. And they were shooting some really cheap Kodak Max that I got a huge, huge landfall of from a local buyer. A local seller was selling like 60 rows of it for like $20 or something like that. So wow. I'm swimming in this stuff. So like they can shoot as much of that as they want. But because it cost me like cents basically for the film and developing and all that. So, but it was a really good time. And it's something that probably as she gets older too, you can maybe move her onto some traditional film or whatever and get a little bit cheaper for you maybe. So, maybe some more predictable results. Who knows? But I'm going to have to back up a little bit here. You said a hotel is like a pub. That sounds like the best idea ever. Like you can get hammered and just get a room.
Yeah, so quite often here in Australia, like you'll hear of like there's a place, you know, there's a few in, there's like the Pineapple Hotel or the Story Bridge Hotel in Brisbane, the Breakfast Creek Hotel. They're actually pubs. And back in the old days, you know, back in the old days of, you know, Australia, you know, a hotel was also somewhere. There'd be a pub downstairs, and then the upstairs would be, you know, accommodation. If you were passing through, you could stay at the hotel. That's where obviously the name hotel comes from. But quite often here in Australia, when you hear somewhere's called a hotel, it's probably just a pub. Yeah.
Wow. I see you learn something every day on the something every episode in this podcast. There you go. So we're here to educate, but all right, Bryce, what's next?
All right, so Kevin Lane asks, please talk about your inspiration, as in what kind of photography satisfies you the most, and how you go about doing it?
I love shooting portraits. I love shooting travel images. I love really simple images. Simple sort of colors, simple composition. It's actually quite tricky sometimes to achieve that in photography with so many distractions when you're shooting, but I love really simple kind of photographs. I also don't like doing I've kind of drawn to instant photography and the toy cameras as well, because, you know, with digital photography, there is such an emphasis on a perfection and a beautiful sharp image, everything perfect. You know, people spend hours stacking images and 40 hours in Photoshop editing them. And I guess my love of film and instant photography is kind of is railing against that. I love the imperfection and getting a beautiful, simple photo that instantly comes out of your Polaroid or appears on your 35mm film. I just really love that.
Yeah, it's your point about that kind of brings me a question for Bryce here, because Bryce, you said that you don't really embrace toy cameras much because you kind of like the perfection, you like predictable results. It almost sounds like you would be more into digital, because some of the things about film is kind of at least part of the fun for me is the flaws and the surprises. So I don't know, why is it that you think that film still resonates with you since that's kind of your style of shooting?
I think it carries over from digital, but I like the process of film so much more. I like the manual, the same thing everyone loves about it, the actually doing it with your hands, because like what Matt was talking about is, you know, sitting behind the screen and being, you know, I was never into photoshopping an image to death.
Yeah.
But I like I like the crispness. I like the sharpness. And I think we were talking about, you know, color film earlier. You know, I've this year I'm going to make a push to start shooting more slide film.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, you can scan it and get the colors you want right away. You're not spending time having to tweak it in Photoshop to try and get a good interpretation of it. I mean, it's pretty much what you see is what you get. Mm. And, you know, that's going to be something I'm trying more. And it sounds bad, but I'm going to, you know, I've been shooting so much Tri-X, you know, 400 is my go-to film. I'm going to start.
Nothing wrong with that, man.
No, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Yeah. And I love the grain, but, you know, I'm starting to shoot more large format, and I'm kind of curious about trying finer grain films and seeing how those enlarge in the darkroom. Like, how can I almost, I don't, it sounds backwards, but how can I get, you know, a darkroom print to look as, you know, perfect as a inkjet print.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you might be the type of guy that would love the T-Max stuff then, man. Cause it's there's very little grain and, you know, you're staying in the Kodak family, but man, they can definitely, I've had T-Max shots that people have thought were digital. So, you know, because they are so sharp and grain free pretty much. So,
well, yeah. And all that being said, I really do appreciate, you know, the imperfections of the film. And like my senior in college, I started purposely ruining film before I would develop it to see how it'd turn out. And here recently, I've been really looking at the Revlog. I want to buy a few rolls of that and give it a try.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't tried any of that. You've tried some of that stuff, right, Matt? Some of those. I heard an episode of yours where you tried some of the color shifted sort of films. Yeah,
I tried it and I mucked it up. So what happened is, a lot of this film, I had two rolls of film with me, and one was Yotica and Teres, and the other one was Psych Blues. And Psych Blues has a DX code. Yotica and Teres, they put the sticker over the DX code. And so I loaded it up. I did a little poll on my two Instagrams, and people chose Yotica and Teres. So I went out at 5 a.m. to shoot some sunflowers in summer, and beautiful, beautiful sunflowers. Loved the images. But I put the Yotica and Teres in my Mew 2, which is the stylus Epic Olympus camera. And of course, with no DX code, it's a 400 rated film, Yotica and Teres. And the Olympus just rated it at 100 with no DX code. And I got the images back. I didn't realize. And I thought, oh man, these, like this, this Yotica film, there's some of the colors on, there's hardly any colors at all in some frames. It's because I'm an idiot and I put it in a camera that rated it at 100. So I actually overexposed the film by two stops. And so only on certain frames you could see the colors come through.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I think it's cool that those films are out there, because I think it could be I know a lot of purists may kind of look down on them or whatever, but I think it's interesting that they're out there for people that maybe come into film that are used to using the Instagram filters, like, well, these are based on film. And so, you know, if they go out and buy like a roll of Ektar and a nice camera, they're going to be like, well, this doesn't have, why doesn't this look like Instagram filters? But those films definitely will kind of give you some of the look that maybe some new shooters that are interested in some of the more weirdness trying to get some more weird artifacts in their shots. I think that serves a good purpose for maybe getting some new people into it. So I think I'm glad they're out there. I want to shoot some too, just for shits and giggles, I guess. But yeah. All right. So what we got next?
Oh, let me find my place. So that was Kevin Lane. So the next one looks like a Jeffrey Seacrest here.
Before we move on, Kevin Lane sent me a couple of APS cameras this week. And Kevin, thank you so much. I'm going to talk about that on a solo show coming up. I just want to let you know I did get them. And thank you so much, man. He sent me two little APS compact cameras. Very nice of him. So just want to get that out there. Thank you, Kevin. But all right, go ahead.
So Jeffrey asked, what's an existing film that you haven't tried yet but would like to? And also, Budgie Smugglers or Banana Hammock?
I actually had to Google what a banana hammock was. In terms of my swimwear, I wear board shorts, gentlemen. Do you know? I'm guessing you know what board shorts are.
Yeah, that's what I wear.
Yeah. So I would not look good, you know, with my dad bod. I would not look good in either Budgie Smugglers or a banana hammock. Stick to the board shorts.
It doesn't stop a lot of other dad bods from trying to rock them, though. Man, I got to say,
absolutely, that's very true. Very true. So I was going to say the film I'd love to try, which I've actually got a roll on my fridge. I just haven't tried it yet. I was going to say CineStill 50, you know, just to suck up to Andre Dominguez. But since he's not on the show, I'm actually going to choose a film that we were talking about in the break, which is Ektar. I've actually got three rolls of Ektar, and for some reason, I've never tried it. I don't know if you guys have seen, but there's somewhere on the interwebs, there's this like a quiz, and it tells you what film that you are. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't tried that.
I'll try and find it. But you go through all these questions and images, and it tells you which film stock you should try. And I actually got Ektar.
Oh, and, really?
So I should try Ektar, really, yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film, man. It really is. I think Kodak was trying, like, because I mean, I think they kind of saw it as the replacement for slide film in a way, because it kind of has that pop that some of their older, like, color saturated slide films had or whatever. And it does have a serious for a you know, a color negative film. It does have a lot of pop in the color, and it's a beautiful film. But good stuff. All right, Bryce, what we got?
I think I've just found this website, by the way. Oh, okay. I think it's called. Okay. I think it's called Film Dating, believe it or not. So it's called Film Dating, and there's a quiz. I can't quite find it, but I think it's called Film Dating, and you choose like five images or five questions, and it'll tell you which film stock. Yeah.
Oh, nice, nice. Now I know I'll be up even later after editing, because I may have to do that. So.
All right, doesn't take long at least.
All right, what we got next?
All right, Matt Jones asks, how is winning the Sunny 16 Cheap Shots Challenge?
Oh, yeah.
Has it changed your life?
Thank you. Yeah. The short answer, it hasn't. You know, I said to my wife, I said, I was really excited. And I said, I've won. And she goes, what have you won? I said, I sent some photos in and to the Sunny 16 podcast and I won. And she said, oh, what have you won? I said, oh, nothing. She's like, oh, plastic crap. And she muttered something about podcasts being a waste of time and went off. But I actually won. but I actually won. I found out later when I listened. I actually won a voucher from Analog Wonderland. I don't know how much it is, but I've sent an email to the Sunnies saying, oh, great that I've won. You can send, you know, the £1,000 Analog Wonderland voucher to my email address, please. Thank you very much. So maybe that will change my life. But the images that I took... I need to do more images. These are the images I took were two images. I'll post them up on my Matt Loves cameras Instagram by the time Mike's finished editing this show. I actually did a model shoot with a lady called Annika Grace in Brisbane after dark. And I there was two images. One was outside a bar and she's wearing sunglasses and there's like a neon bar sign reflected.
Oh, yeah, I remember that shot. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to big up myself here. Most of the shots I take are crap, but these two images were really beautiful. The beautiful colors, the beautiful model, and I just love the superior 1600 colors. And that's, I guess, going back to one of the earlier questions, that's the kind of image I like to take, a really kind of simple, beautiful, colored, nice shot. But it's actually, I find it really hard to take simple shots. And then there was another one in an alleyway I actually used some LED lighting for because it was so bloody dark. Mm-hmm. But I really, yeah, when I do a shoot with a model, like I do digital stuff with models sometimes, I'll always shoot film photos with them as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, bit of fun.
Are the models impressed that you're shooting film? Or are they like, why is this guy pulling out this antiquated technology?
I don't think any model's ever been impressed by anything I do until they get the photo. Until they get the photos, digital photos. Like, seem to like the digital photos, but usually they're like, oh man, this guy's getting another camera out of his bag and another camera and another camera. And I'll say, I'm just going to take a few shots with this one and this one and this one. So I usually take, you know, four or five cameras on a shoot with me, probably two digital and, you know, two or three film. Yeah. So they probably just probably get sick of me taking photos, really.
Bryce, have you ever worked with any models or anything?
No, not really. You know, besides working with clients or something like that. But
yeah,
you know, just to go out and hire a model and do a photo shoot, I've never done that.
Yeah, I haven't either. It's a world that's kind of unknown. I just can't even picture myself doing it. I think I'd be so damn nervous, and they would pick up on it, and it would show in the photos. But it's something that I kind of want to have a future. Some more guests that. There's a couple of people on the Facebook group that do that a lot. Like it's kind of their whole gig, basically. And I'd like to have some of them on the show to kind of maybe either talk me into it or confirm that that's a bad idea for me. So I don't know, but yeah, it's always been an interesting thing that I've never tried. So
it's usually in most cities there are, I mean, going back years, there used to be websites like Model Mayhem and stuff like that. But usually in most cities there are TFP group. So it's TFP is an old term, time for print, which is obviously from the film printing days. And so you do a model wouldn't charge, the photographer wouldn't charge, and you go out together and you make some images, and she or he gives their model time for your prints or your, you know, these days your digital images. So all the models that I've done recently, I don't pay for them. I've actually done some camera reviews for Shotkit and for Digital Photography School. And so some of the pictures have got into those articles. But they just get the files for their Instagram. And so it's usually, sometimes the models aren't very experienced. So if you've never shot the model before and you're a bit scared, I wouldn't be scared, because a lot of these models, they may not have a lot of experience.
Oh, okay.
And so as long as you kind of have a plan of what you're doing, you know, it's pretty cool and fun.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I could see that being a fun process. If you're both kind of, newbies at it, that could be a fun creative process. So yeah, all right, maybe all right, I'm a little more positive about it, but that, so
well, you know, and to get yourself into it, you can always ask the willing family member to go sit, you know, find someone you're comfortable with to kind of break the ice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's true. Yeah. Although my family, at least my immediate family, my wife and kids, are so sick of me putting cameras in their faces, I think I might have burned that bridge at this point. But
same.
But all right. So what's up next?
So David Mahaly, first off,
the old
thanks.
Camera guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So first off, thanks again for the tip off on Expired Film Day in March. Along those lines, with Polaroid Week upon us, will you be taking your beloved Polaroid SLR 680 SE out for a spin this week, or is there another Polaroid vying for your attention?
That's a great question. I'm actually, you know what, I'm really disorganized, as you may or may not have gathered. I mean, I love doing my podcast, love shooting my cameras. Originally when I came up with the idea for the podcast, I was going to do a different camera and film every week. And then it dawned on me that there's no way in the world I'm that organized to do that. And I'm so that I sort of morphed the show into Matt Loves Cameras. But I kind of forgot about Polaroid Week, even though we're in the midst of it right now. Mm-hmm. But thanks to David for the reminder. I'm looking at my Polaroids here. I've got all sorts of ones. I've got a Sun 670 or a 636. But I might actually finish off some film I've got in my SX70 because I'm going to do a show soon, a review soon on the SX70 on Matt Loves Cameras. It's a camera review of a camera from 1972. So it's only, 47 year old review. Yeah, I'm sure Edward Lamb would be very impressed with my review. So, yeah.
The SX70 is a beautiful camera. And folks, yeah, we are in the midst of Polaroid Week. I guess it started technically today and runs through Friday. Why Polaroid Week hates Saturdays, I don't know. And why it's only 6 days, I'm still confused by it. But they're going to call it Polaroid Week. But it is runs till this coming Friday. So the show will come out on Monday. So you'll still have 5 days to shoot some Polaroids. So we are currently in Polaroid Week. So get out there and burn up some of that instant film. So I plan on doing that myself. Maybe tomorrow I think I'm going to throw a pack in one of my Polaroids and take some shots. So, all right. What else? Are we getting kind of through these, Bryce? Are we looking good?
Looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-ish questions left.
Okay. Let's, we can do it. I feel this. We got this. So,
all right. So for the next here, we got Vicky and Bill Thu. Hi, Matt Murray. Where do you find your gear and film, locally or overseas? The Aussie marketplace is very small and seems largely centered on Melbourne. Also, please tell Mike why cockroaches are better than cane toads and blue superior to maroon.
Well, I'll take that last one first.
I'm not sure what all this means, but
do you know what? No, you know what it means. So we have we have various forms of football here in Australia. So we have what you guys call soccer. We have Australian rules football, Aussie rules, and we also have rugby league and rugby union. And rugby league, there's a big contest every year called the State of Origin with Queensland, one of our states, Queensland versus New South Wales. And so Vicky and Bill are referring to the State of Origin match between Queensland and New South Wales. They clearly go for New South Wales because they wear blue and we wear maroon. We don't actually pronounce it maroon here in Australia. We pronounce it maroon. I don't know why. It's just a weird Aussie thing. So there you go. In terms of where I get my gear and film from, I get quite a bit of it from here in Australia. I'm a big Facebook Marketplace addict, and I'm always looking on Facebook Marketplace for cheap stuff and cool stuff. In terms of film, I buy some locally and I buy some from overseas. For example, my Class S I got from Japan, and some of the other cameras I've got I bought from the United States or Europe. I sort of buy it all over the place, really.
Well, I'm going to have to say I'm going to have to side with Bill on this question, because I'm a big University of Kentucky fan, and they wear blue, and our rival is they wear red, so I'm gonna have to go with so there you go. But all right, so what was the thing about the cockroaches? What was that?
Yeah, so New South Wales is known as cockroaches, and Queensland is known as the cane toads.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we have these things they introduced in Australia about 100 years ago. They had these beetles and the sugarcane's a big crop here in Queensland, makes a lot of money, and they had all these beetles on the sugarcane, and they thought, hey, why don't we introduce this species of toad from somewhere else in the world? So they introduced this cane toad to eat the cane beetles. What they didn't realize was the cane toad couldn't climb the sugarcane to eat the beetles. It was useless. And now there are billions and billions of these bloody cane toads. They're basically an environmental disaster. Billions of them everywhere. They started in Queensland and have spread out everywhere, almost everywhere in Australia now. It's just a complete, European people thinking they can introduce different animals to Australia. Just so many bad stories.
Wow. Oh, man, I'm learning a lot of stuff about Australia. You know, it's funny. I hear all these stories about Australia possibly being like, I think you guys have like the scariest damn animal wildlife of any country that I've heard this story. I don't know if this is true or not. I heard the story about the spider that's there that like gets up on its back legs and then like thrust its fangs down. Like,
what?
That's like the scariest thing ever. Like, this thing gets on its back legs and like drives the fangs downward. Like, did somebody tell me a myth there? Does that actually exist?
I don't know. Probably there's a lot of difference. There's thousands of spiders here. It's probably true. But I mean, for the vast majority, like, of people, like, we actually had next door, we had, at one stage, we had not hamsters, what do you call them, those bloody stupid guinea pigs. We had guinea pigs. I hate guinea pigs, but my wife and my kids decided to buy guinea pigs, and our next door neighbors had guinea pigs. And all of a sudden, they let the guinea pigs out overnight, and this massive big carpet snake, about probably 3 meters long, ate their guinea pigs. It's pretty. I mean, the carpet snakes are generally harmless, you know, unless you have a very small child. There's sharks, there's all sorts of stuff, but you're much more likely, if you came to Australia, you're much more likely statistically to get hurt in a car accident than you are being bitten by a spider, a snake, a shark, a crocodile, or anything else.
I don't know. I got to find out if the spider exists, because it sounds like the creepiest damn thing on the planet. But
I'll tell you one thing. In some parts of Australia, there's a thing called a blue-ringed octopus. And it's a little octopus, and it's deadly, and it'll kill you if you don't get the antivenom. So there's all stuff like that as well. Like a tiny little cute octopus will kill you. Don't worry about the spiders.
Wow. Australia is one of those places I always wanted to go to, and it's definitely on my bucket list, but I hear things like that, and I'm like, maybe we'll move it down when I'm really old, so if I do get if that octopus gets me, it's like, well, it's been a good run, man. Yeah.
Nah, you'll love it. Come out, you'll love it, Mike.
I'm sure I will. So, all right, Bryce, what we got next?
All right, I'm actually this is a good question here. Have you shot a Robert Brown asks, have you shot a swing lens camera like the Noblex or a Widelux?
No, but I'd love to. I don't think I can afford a Widelux. I think they're a bit expensive for me at the moment. But I saw, I have been scarred by Russian cameras in the past, but I saw, I think it's a Horizon T, is it? A Horizon T, have you guys seen that?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, Horizon.
Yeah. I think you can get one for about $100 from the former Soviet Union, and I'm kind of keen to get one of them. It sort of has a lens where it swings around, and I believe the photo is in like panoramic. Is it in panoramic format, the photo, or so I'm pretty keen for that. I'll tell you guys a story. I on Facebook Marketplace one day, I couldn't believe it, I saw this lady was selling an X-Pan. She didn't call it an X-Pan, she called it a panoramic 35mm camera. And she had this X-Pan up with the lens, all the boxes, manuals, everything, the lens hood, everything, for about $1,400. And I was like, what? Is this broken, or what's the story here? Because they command a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. And I was messaging her about it, and she wasn't really getting back to me. And eventually she came back and she said, I'll send you some photos tomorrow, and she never did. And then she just took it off. And I messaged her and said, oh, is this available? And she went, oh, no, I've decided I'm keeping it now. And I thought, yeah, right. You've just worked out how much this baby's worth.
Right.
And then 3 weeks later, she put it up for the equivalent of about $5,000. So I think she just, the penny dropped, oh, it's actually worth a lot more money than this X-Pan's worth a lot more money than it used to be worth. So wow. I'm kind of sad I never got over to her place and bought it on the spot, but oh well.
Yeah, the ones that got away, man. So all right, what we got next?
So Junior Wyatt asks, if you had to shoot one camera, one film for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Easy, it'd be the Polaroid SLR 680 with Polaroid pre-2008 Polaroid 600 film. And I think that's one of the great tragedies of photography. You know, when Polaroid got taken over and they went into, you know, different hands when they went bankrupt, all those emulsions, all that know-how from decades and decades of instant photography just went down the gurgler, went down the drain. And, you know, I'm really appreciative that Polaroid Originals is there, but I think you've got to be honest, their emulsions, even though they're doing, you know, a good job, but we can all shoot Polaroid still, you know, the emulsions aren't the same as they were pre-2008. And I think that's a great tragedy in photography.
Yeah, I agree. I shot a lot of that stuff back then, man, especially when they were kind of towards the end. And I was constantly finding Polaroid film at like one of my local camera stores just discounted, like because it was getting ready to be expired or whatever. But it was always end up being fine. But like, man, I shot a ton of it. I used to get it so cheap towards the end there. And it as much as I, you know, I'm happy that we can still shoot this stuff. It's the Polaroid originals is getting better all the time, but they still haven't quite gotten the beauty of the original stuff. Yeah. But yeah. All right. And I'm not even going to attempt to ask. I'm glad you had a quick answer for that. That's amazing. Cause there's no way I could answer that. I could sit here and hem and haw about that for the next half hour, but Bryce, do you have a quick answer for that? Could you answer that one quick? I couldn't, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to pick. I know it'd probably be Tri-X for the film, and you know, I'd have to. I mean, what do I want to shoot? 35 millimeter or medium format for the rest of my life? It's too hard to pick.
Yeah, yeah, I'd probably agree with you on the Tri-X though, because it's so versatile. You could probably cover any situation with it. So that's probably a good pick. Cameras, I mean, there's a reason I have like over 50 cameras. There's no way in hell I can narrow that down. but I don't even
have that many. But it's on any given day, you know.
That's a tough one. But maybe I just go with the Leica. I don't know, all right. So we should be getting close to the end here, right?
How many we got? We got two left.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Tony Blanchard, have you shot with a Kive 60? And if not, why not?
No, As I said earlier, I've been scarred by that little Russian Chaika. It was a beautiful little green hunk of Soviet metal, half-frame camera. And I took so much care at shooting 72 exposures through it three times in a row, to the film development staff, tell me at my local lab in 2011, mate, you got nothing on here. What the hell are you doing? Even though the camera looked perfect, the shutter looked like it was working, the aperture blades weren't, you know, moved. So I was really scarred by that. So I have not shot with a Kiev 60, but I might put it on my list. The Horizon T, that swing lens camera, is probably one I'm looking at from the former Soviet Union first, though.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, I haven't had too much. Actually, the only Russian camera I've ever had is the Lomo LCA. So
nice.
So we'll see how I get along with that as I experiment a little bit more with it. But yeah. Okay, what we got next?
And Rachel Brewster asks, is Marshall a good boy?
Marshall is a very good boy. He's my Dalmatian. We got him from a puppy farm, and they said he was the runt of the litter, and he was going to be the smallest. Well, he weighs around, in American terms, he weighs about 100 pounds. He's a big boy. Oh, wow. Yeah, he's a giant. And I'm pretty much the only one in the family that can walk him, because everyone else in my family is small, and they don't weigh enough to hold him back. And I do like going out for photo walks with him, but the problem is I'll have a point and shoot in one hand. I'll have the lead for Marshall in the other hand. And I try and stop him and try and take a photo, but he's kind of tugging at the lead. I'm not a very good dog trainer, and he just wants to run off. And so my photos turn out blurry, but generally he's a good boy, yeah.
And that was Rachel from the Sunny 16 podcast. So very nice to hear from Rachel. So nice. Let's see here. And Rachel sent me a really, really nice message too during all my family issues. And I definitely appreciate that, Rachel. It really, really brightened my a really dark day when she sent that message. So thanks, Rachel, for that message. It's very sweet of you. But let's go on to the next one.
That would be it.
Oh, that's it?
Yep, that's all.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do what they call a tease, because Matt, in this question thread, you had said if this one you'd answered, and you said if you get more than 10 likes, you were going to do an imitation of me. And so I think we'll save that. That's the tease for the third segment. So we're going to have an impression of the gutter man coming from Matt Murray, who's already done one in the past. And I don't know, some people think he nailed it. We'll see. Let's see if he's perfected it a little bit more. So with that tease, you know you got to stick around. So we'll go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back for the final segment, and just want to give a big shout out, big thanks to the folks in the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group for all the fine questions to Matt Murray. It was, you guys just never fail to come through and make this job a whole lot easier, so we definitely appreciate that. There's a couple things we want to get out in this segment here to kind of before we wrap the show up. Obviously, the signups for the Negative Positives Double Exposure Tag Team Challenge have closed. So hopefully everybody that wanted to participate has gotten in there before the end of it there. But Sean Nelson did send me an email. Of course, Sean Nelson from UtahFilmPhotography.com has pretty much organized this whole thing for us. And thank God he does, because it would be a train wreck if we tried to do it. So he has sent an email. It says, I've started the process of matching up photographers. We have a few problems that I'm trying to address with individuals. I thought this update would keep you in the loop so you don't have people complaining or trying to guess what I'm doing. He says, in black and white, everyone but two people have been matched. We have a person in Colombia that wants to shoot first but doesn't want to ship the row out of the country. We don't have anyone else in his country, so I emailed and asked if he'd ship to the UK. In the color section, he says, we have far more people that want to be first shooters in this group. I randomly picked five people, emailed them, and asked if they could be second shooters. I also told them that if they responded no, there's a chance that I'd have to drop their sign-up. Again, explaining the circumstances and how they were selected at random. If I get timely responses to these emails, we should have people matched up by this weekend. He says, and the group of double exposure podcasters, I just need to check over them. There's two individuals that are solo podcasters that asked to be matched up, but I think we are good. Anyway, there you go. So thank you, Sean Nelson from UtahFilmPhotography.com, and thank you so much for organizing this whole thing. So if you get an email from Sean, and you can be a little bit flexible, you know, trying to work out some issues with some of the participants, maybe try to be a little flexible with whether you wanted to shoot first or second or where you wanted to ship, and everything should work out just good. But thanks. I'm sure that's a big headache to try to organize, and definitely thanks to Sean for that. And the cool thing about this this particular round is Mr. Bryce Randall is making some trophies for this for the winners. So yeah, Bryce, tell us about these trophies.
So I just got the idea one day. It's not going to be anything overly fancy, but I don't want to destroy cameras, especially any kind of working camera. So I asked for some donations of cameras that will never be used again. You don't want to see them turned into lamps. Here, make a trophy out of it. So,
that's right.
So, and honestly, my plan, I'm just going to spray paint these gold and put them on a nice little wooden base. And once we get the winners of the challenge, I'll put the date and the winner's name on there.
Nice. Well, Bryce, thank you so much for doing that, man. That's a lot of work, and that's very cool. And I actually sent an old Pentax ZX50 that has the mirror gear failure that I mentioned earlier on the podcast. So that's why I sent that Pentax to you, because it is definitely unrepairable. So at least it'll live life as a trophy for some fine winner out there. So,
And I want to say thank you to everyone that did donate. I wish I had a list of everybody, but your generosity was much appreciated.
Absolutely. And how cool is that? The winners get a trophy. And there's no participation trophies. These are true. You truly earn these, right? So
yeah. Oh yeah, you get bragging rights for the next year.
That's right. A whole year of bragging rights. So I know if our podcast was to win in the podcast challenge, I'd probably just put it as like part of the intro of the show every week, like the winners of the podcast community challenge. Like, you know, I just probably just brag every week about it. So, but you know, darn good well, M's not going to pick Andre and I. So, but that's just that's the way. And M is going to judge the podcast challenge. So if you guys want to start kissing up to M from emulsive.org, you might want to start now, because I get on his good side. But if you want that gleaming golden trophy. So but Bryce also, on top of being super cool by making these trophies for us, he also runs our Instagram page. And I was kind of like, when I started it, I was like, man, I don't have time to really make this what as good as I'd like for it to be. And Bryce kind of volunteered to kind of help me run it, and pretty much does run it. The only thing I post is a couple of things here and there, but usually show announcements and stuff. But thank you, Bryce, for taking over the Instagram account. It's definitely taken a big load off of, because I'm horrible with social media anyway. But can you tell us a little bit about what you've seen since you took over the Instagram account and my laziness and actually made it work? So,
it's definitely a, it wasn't lacking before or anything, Mike. I just, wanted to help with a load of, take some of the load off there. But we've almost doubled in followers since I've taken over. And then what I'm really impressed by is the hashtag negative positives. You guys have over 4,400 images in this thing so far. I mean, compared to some other hashtags, that's not a lot, but I think for this little community driven thing we got going on, you guys are really showing some cool work. And I check this almost every other day or so, and what I'm really starting to see is just scrolling through the feed, I can really spot, like, okay, I know who took this photo and I know who took that photo. All your individual styles are really showing through.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool that's one thing I've been kind of meaning to do, is just like search the negative positives hashtag, and just so I can see what listeners are posting. It's a good way to like check out what other people that listen to this podcast are doing. Just search that hashtag and see some of the fine folks in this community, which is a pretty cool. And it's something I need to do more often, but I'm not that great at social media, so I can definitely thank Bryce for helping me out there, man. You're doing a fine job, man. I really appreciate it. So,
well, you're welcome, and I appreciate you letting me do it. It's kind of, like I said, just fun getting to see everyone's work.
Yeah, that's super cool. All right, so the next thing we want to get out is, if you don't participate in Polaroid Week, which you should, that ends on Friday. But next Sunday, which will be, what day is next Sunday?
The 28th?
Yeah, I think it's the 28th. That's right. That is Worldwide Pinhole Day. And so if you miss out on Polaroid Day, you can still next Sunday do Worldwide Pinhole Day. And I know there's a big pinhole meetup, a worldwide meetup, I guess, in Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States. But a couple of our extended family of this podcast, our people in this community, have decided they can't make it to the United States. So if you're in the UK, you can meet up with Neil Piper from the Soot and Whitewash podcast and Andrew Bartram from the Lensless podcast and the Large Format Photography podcast. They are going to have a meetup in Boston, UK, the original Boston, on that day. So if you want to join them and you're in the UK, definitely check out the website. It's the website photowalk.me, and just check out the date for that Sunday and look up WWPD Boston, UK, and you can sign up and let them know you're coming and meet up with them for a little pinhole shooting on Worldwide Pinhole Day if you're in the UK and can't make it to the United States for the Boston meetup or Boston, Massachusetts meetup. But I actually plan on getting out my Hoga WPC wide pinhole camera next Sunday and doing a little pinhole stuff myself to kind of get in on that. I always miss all these little photography events that they have, and I'm trying to make a conscious effort to actually do that. I'm going to try to shoot some Polaroids tomorrow, some pinholes next Sunday, and try to actually participate this time. But either one of you guys thinking about doing either one of these things?
No.
I'm definitely doing Polaroid, and I think I've got a Holger with a pinhole. But given my Diana experiences I was talking to you earlier about in the break, I think I'm a bit scarred by the plastic Diana Holger kind of cameras. But I might give the Holger a go. Yeah. You haven't got anything, Bryce?
No, I'd have to find my Polaroid camera, and I've never shot anything pinhole. But I'd be real interested if someone celebrated both holidays there with a pinhole Polaroid shot.
there you go. Yeah, cool. I remember I tried to convert a Polaroid like one of the just the boxy sort of like 600 series cameras. I took out the lens and tried to put a pinhole in it. I was like, I'm gonna do some, this is back when I was getting Polaroid film really cheap, of course, and mm-hmm. I'm gonna do some pinhole Polaroid. It's gonna be awesome. And basically what I got was images with a with like an oval in the center of it where you could barely make out an image inside the oval.
Oh, no.
So it was a complete bust, and it kept me away from pinhole photography up until like last year when I bought this Holga wide pinhole camera from Corey Cannon and ended up getting some shots I really, really liked out of it. So now I'm kind of interested in it again, but it took me like a decade to even think about pinhole again. And it wasn't pinhole's fault. It was all my dumbass fault. But anyway, all right, I think it's about time to wrap up this program. And so let's go ahead and let everybody get their socials out there and all that stuff. So Matt, thank you very much for coming on the show, man. It's been a real pleasure, and I really enjoy your it's been a pleasure having you, and I really enjoy your podcast, and I hope you keep it going, and I hope everybody checks it out. So Matt, where can people find you and tell them about your podcast and everything you want to get out there? So
sure. So you can find my podcast in your favorite podcast app at Matt Loves Cameras, Matt with two T's, Matt Loves Cameras. Also on Instagram at Matt Loves Cameras, and also the website mattlovescameras.com. There's a couple other Instagram accounts I can tell you about. I've just started posting. I talked earlier about when I went to India with my EOS 500N camera and I shot a lot of slide film. So I've just started an Instagram account called Matt Loves India, and they're the images from 1998 when I was shooting Kodak color transparency film in India. And also another good one is a group of photographers, many of whom are in the Negative Positives Facebook group, the Frugal Film Project on Instagram and other places as well. Mm-hmm. That's a really good one to check out as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Bryce, where can people find you?
And you can find me on Instagram at Bryce_Randall is my personal account. And then, of course, on the Negative Positives.
Awesome. Awesome. And both of you guys are good with the Facebook group as well, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. So got to get that out there too. So, and you can find my work. Oh, awesome. Oh, thank you, Bryce, for coming on and helping me out with Andre's absence. And so, yeah, thank you for bailing me out, man.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Anytime.
Cool. Cool. All right. You can check out my photography on Instagram at GuttermanPhoto. On Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. And obviously check out the Instagram account that Bryce runs. That is Negative Positives on Instagram. And again, I'm going to throw it out there again, the Facebook group, which has just been amazing. The Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. And I think that's everything we need to get out. I'm not sure who's doing the midweek solo show. So, but there'll be one. It'll be either me or Andre, I'm sure. Maybe Andre will come out of retirement for that. So we'll see what happens there. But thanks, Bryce. Thanks, Matt, for coming on. Always a pleasure talking to you all. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We will talk to you soon. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool film photos.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, guys. We will see you soon. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Mike Gutterman here from beautiful Louisville, Kentucky, host of the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast. Now, I want to tell y'all, during my shift at the Ford factory, I need a lot of content to get me through the night. And to be honest, I listen to a lot of crap. But I save the best for last. So when I get home from a shift at the Ford factory, I like to sit out on my porch. I breathe in my beautiful Kentucky air. I drink my beautiful Kentucky bourbon. And I eat my finger-licking good Kentucky fried chicken. In one hand, I have my Pentax. In the other hand, I have my EPS cameras. And in yet another hand, I have my Leica camera, man. Yeah. And I sit back in my rocking chair on my porch, and I listen to the best darn film photography podcast I've ever heard, coming out of Brisbane, Australia. Matt Loves Cameras. Make sure y'all look up Matt Loves Cameras on your podcast app and subscribe. That's all from me. Everybody stay positive. Shoot some cool film photos. Nice, nice.
A Gutter Man Cave production!